Hello and welcome to Dummy, a weekly conversation among editors and friends of Howler Magazine. My name is George Qureshi. I'm a little under the weather. I'm not feeling great. We had a party last night. I got up early Tuesday morning to fly up to New York, and then I got up early this morning, today's Wednesday, to fly home. And so I just want everyone to know that I'm sacrificing my body for this podcast.
George, are you recording Dummy hungover? Did you not come to work ready to perform today?
I'm really not hungover. I don't know what the problem is. I think it's like sleeping in a strange bed. My buddy Fred, who I stayed with, has a cat, and I'm allergic. And I woke up a little groggy. Fred made me some delicious coffee that I drank black. It's the first ever cup of coffee I've drunk black. The whole way, like I drank the whole thing. It was delicious, and I never knew that it could be that good. I always threw in some cream and some sugar. Anyway, the other person that you are hearing there is the only member of this podcast ever to have signed a contract with the Harrisburg City Islanders in the last week and a half. That would be Bobby Warshaw. Bobby, hello.
Hey, man. Hey, thanks for coming on today. I appreciate you playing through the pain.
Yeah, I figured as the captain of this podcast, you would appreciate it. You would notice. You would appreciate. Bobby, we told our listeners on the Play podcast, which if you're not a listener to the Play, you should be, that you signed a new contract. It's very exciting. Tell us about Harrisburg, man.
Ooh, it's a lot that goes into it. A complicated decision.
Yeah,
one that
it's your home. It's your hometown team, first of all.
It is. I'm from Harrisburg. Well, from Mechanicsburg, which is about 10 minutes from Harrisburg. So I grew
Is it a suburb of Harrisburg?
Yeah. Like my dad would go to work basically the exact route that I'm going every day.
And what is Harrisburg a suburb of?
Nothing. It's your own city. It's a state capital. Oh, Don't be dissing my Harrisburg like that.
So this is clearly a bid for like your spot in the Pennsylvania State Hall of Fame, Sports Hall of Fame.
I'm trying. That would be cool.
Didn't you win some ridiculous honors in high school or something like a high school soccer player?
I really enjoyed high school soccer. High school soccer is awesome.
It's very modest. You did okay. Well, so you're back in Pennsylvania. It probably feels great. You're breathing that good, healthy Pennsylvania air, Amish air.
Not Amish air, but that's okay. We'll let it fly.
Amish air would be the most terrifying name of any airline that you could ever fly.
It really would, wouldn't it? It sounds like clean, refreshing air to breathe, but as an airline, it's not so hot.
No, as an airline, you're like, wait a minute, who, like somebody's like peddling or something. I don't know. I don't want to get in trouble here. I don't know if we have any Amish listeners. Probably not, because that would also be.
By definition, we cannot have Amish listeners.
Right. Okay. Well, you're breathing that good old Amish air. You're not flying Amish air. Bobby, congratulations, man. This is great. We're going to hear more about this in the future. You guys are in preseason right now?
We are. First game is coming up this weekend.
Tell me about it. What's the prognosis? Who are you playing, and what time is it? And
we play at Richmond Kickers on Saturday, and I don't know much yet. I don't know how we travel. I'm trying to figure out all these things on the fly. We play four straight away games, which is always scary to start a season.
I'm sorry for those sounds. I'm getting notices that it's time to tape Dummy, and here we are. Look, I'm ahead of schedule. Okay, that's fantastic. And wait, but do you have like a sense of the team? Like, are you feeling good about the team? I mean, what's the feeling like in the locker room?
It's good. Everyone always, it's the thing about American sports. And one thing I learned about America versus Europe is in Europe, it's very clear. There's some teams that are going in like, let's not get last place. Mm-hmm. If we get 13 out of 17, it's a success. But in America, every single team feels they can win the league. Even though Harrisburg is one of the smaller clubs in the league, we still approach it like we're going to go, maybe not 30-0, but we're going to win a championship at the end.
So, Bobby, when you join a new team like this, is it sort of like prison where you have to go up to the toughest guy and beat the shit out of him? Like if you join a new team just so you get respect, or is it different than that?
So it's a totally precarious situation, especially for me. It's someone who isn't, especially here at my hometown team, it's about more than being a talent on the field and being a regular player. I bring some kind of experience and leadership to a club, which is what I saw myself on too. You know, you might not think I'm that good in the field, but I bring a total package.
So I think you are good on the field.
Thanks,
you
man.
Are good on the field. Thanks. I also think they signed you not just because you're really good, but also because they know that they're going to increase the take at the gate because you have friends and family around.
It's exactly right. It's totally right. So when you come into a new club, you want to come in and be assertive and be yourself, but you can't be an asshole. You can't be brash. You can't come in too hot, too fast. So it's something I've thought about every day over these first couple of weeks.
I'm pretty sure that every time Peter Novak joined a new club, though, he beat the shit out of the toughest guy.
Just called him out right away. Two foot right to the knee the first day of practice.
He's like, I don't care if I'm in prison or playing soccer. It's the same thing. I got to assert myself.
And it's true.
Who knows?
Yeah. And the thing is, it crosses my mind. I do stuff like that sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, you have to. You've got to. And the thing is, you can't waver at all. When you do it, if you do it and then back down, it makes you look worse and you do it and you're like, yeah, fuck you, I'm here.
You don't have to talk about specifics here, but like, you know, when you come in to a new team, like sort of late toward the end of preseason, can you feel like the tension when you're competing for a spot, you know, a starting spot, you're like, I want to start, you know, the guy who might be replaced wants to start. Like, how does that relationship go?
It's really difficult, particularly, especially coaches often ask you or ask players, hey, we need a right back. We need a right midfielder. And they ask for help. And part of, as much as I want to help the coach and build that relationship, it's also hard because you get to know those guys. So not only are you fighting for a spot, you're bringing in players that will then fight with your friends for their spots. So at all times, it's a really, I've thought to myself since my freshman year, once you leave college and you become a professional, it's a harsh awakening because there's a cap on all your friendships. Friendships can only go so high because as much as you want to be friends, there's an inherent life competition taking place.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, this is interesting. We're going to stick with you through the season and get to hear some more about it, which I'm very excited about. But good luck to you guys this weekend. I'm really pulling for you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. So, Bobby, this is not going to be the longest episode of Dummy we've ever recorded. We have Rowan Ricardo Phillips coming up soon. He was at the party last night, and I was going to ask him to read his very short little piece of writing about Lionel Messi at the party. But then I got there and I was like, you know what? This is not a reading environment. People are drinking and listening to music and having fun. And it was very loud and nobody wants to listen to somebody read. I learned.
Was it a good
party? I didn't
party?
Ask him to do it.
Did it go
well?
It
was great. It was so much fun. It was packed. I was nervous, but then it was pretty much full within like 30 minutes of it starting, like 7:30. And then it stayed that way till like probably 9:30 or so. It was a solid, solid showing. We sold some copies of the new issue. I got to say like, hello and thanks for coming. And then I introduced, we created this like trailer for the new issue, which is really cool. It's this little short film.
Cool.
I really had very little to do with it, but these great filmmakers in New York did it. And so we had the world premiere last night. Very exciting. Hot ticket.
Do you want to tell everyone listen now that they missed Pharrell performing? Was it Pharrell or Jay-Z?
I can't confirm that.
You can't?
I can't deny it. I could deny it.
I just
but
feel
I'm not
bad
going to.
That if they weren't there, that they missed it, that they have. They should probably go to the next one.
So it's at Webster Hall. So there were all these little teeny boppers lining up for a concert, and someone described it as like the younger, whiter Macklemore that they were going to see. Who I have no idea who that could be, but everyone who came in was like, "Oh, I thought that line outside with all the kids was for this party," and I was like, "No, those are not the Howler demographic." Anyway, Bobby, coming up, Rowan Ricardo Phillips. Yes. All right, we are joined by a poet. A poet. I just made a rhyme that involved poet, and it impressed him, so I like him. Rowan Ricardo Phillips. Rowan, you were at the party last night. Thanks for coming out, man.
I was. My pleasure. And rhyme on, George.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're a poet. You're also, you write essays for Howler. You write about basketball, too, not just soccer. And you're a member of, like, you're a Barcelona culé, right? Is that what they say, culé?
Soci, which is the word for member, like socio.
Right.
Culé is actually a funny story. That name comes because the old stadium in Sants, when you went by the stadium, you could see everyone's butts. Culé means butt.
Yes, yes. Okay. Well, a real soci would know that, and so you've just proven yourself.
That was our test.
That's right. And now I can pretend to be one. Okay, Rowan. Rowan, you wrote about Lionel Messi for our Tens package, and the secret is that you had actually written about him a while back. He broke some record. There are so many records he's broken, but he broke some record, and I asked you, hey, would you write about Lionel Messi? And you did, and then when it came time to do this package, you were the obvious person that I thought of to write about Messi, and you were like, well, why don't we just like adapt what I wrote before? And I thought, oh, that's a good idea. We don't have to I have to do it twice. And I just want to start by reading one small paragraph of what you wrote. It's only one, two, three, four paragraphs in general, but it's a short piece. All these are very short pieces in this package. But if you guys, if you forgive me, I'm just going to read this real quick. This is the third of four paragraphs. So rare are his gifts that the urge is to make him more terrestrial. We compare him, this is talking about Lionel Messi, of course, we compare him with a goal bagger who feasts on penalties and counterattacks because we need something that seems to make sense to us. Of course, you're talking about Cristiano Ronaldo there. Muscles and running and the implication that those muscles and that running could have, with some luck, been us. But there is no dreaming of playing like Leo Messi. The body and mind refuse your request. We are not his defenders. We are the defenders he slalom's by, stopping to make us lose our balance, to provoke doubt in us. Sorry, it's a little dark in here. To provoke doubt in where we're going and what we're seeing. And he's gone in a flash, goalward. So, I love it. I love your writing.
Thanks,
Rowan. Talk to me about Lionel Messi. Why did you want to write it? I mean, you've written about Steph Curry recently too, and I think that there's something about these two players in general, specifically who that sort of inspire you to write about them. And as a poet, I think you in particular need that inspiration. I couldn't just come to you and be like, hey, write about John Terry. I mean, you write something great about John Terry, but you like these guys. What is it about? What is it about Leo Messi?
Well, I think part of the spur also is Howler, which is such a beautiful magazine.
Oh, it's almost stop it.
No, but really, it's really beautiful, and I'm motivated in part by what you're doing and the content, and that as a writer that you're going to be part of such a beautiful package. It really is just a lovely magazine. The writing kind of spurs that on. The thing about Messi and Curry, it's a really provocative comparison because you would think they're the same, littler guys in the sport who do amazing things, but they're actually completely different, I think, because Curry is the exact opposite of what, in that passage you just read, would be the case for fans, right? Curry is much more, I'm the little guy. Curry's 6'3", he's probably 6'1½", actually, without shoes, but, you can't be 6'10". You can't go out to a court and pretend that you are tomahawk dunking unless you can tomahawk dunk or the rim is
that's true.
6 feet high.
although I was at a toddler's birthday party recently and they had one of those Fisher Price basketball hoops and I definitely
exactly. Then you've got to let it rip. But you can go out and dribble, dribble, dribble and hoist and your imagination it goes in because in your imagination it always goes in. That's great. But with Messi, you can't even just approach the touch. Or even if no one's around, to dribble at that velocity and try to veer left or right. It's just, it's not something that you can emulate. And in that way, I think it kind of screws with the mind and the body a little bit. I mean, I live in New York some of the time, Barcelona some of the time. But in New York, definitely, I see tons of kids, prepubescent kids, kids just who are about to hit puberty, who they love Cristiano Ronaldo. And I bumped into one of them just a few months ago, and I said to him, we were having a nice conversation, and I said, listen, I mean, I totally get it. Like, I would hope when I was 13 or 12 that I'm going to be big and strong and shoot hard.
Hairless.
And this kid plays, whatever level of youth club soccer there is, and I'm sure that you are big and strong and you power past people, and you always have these levels where you could kind of be in your imagination doing what Cristiano Ronaldo does. Running diagonals off the ball, getting there in the box. These types of things, they're within the realm of, understandable physics if you like the game. But you can't even, some of Messi's first touches or even just the way he will receive a pass with someone right, left, and on his back and simply turn or drop the hips or drop the shoulders. There are these nuances that,
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard to describe, which is why I think there hasn't been a lot of great writing about, when I read a piece about one of these guys who's a creative genius on the field and it lives up to that player, that's impressive to me, right? Because that's hard to do. It's very hard to put into words what you're seeing and how that makes you feel. And I think you did that. And I think that one of the things, when I read your piece the first time, what struck me is such an interesting thought, an original idea that I hadn't thought about before was that he breaks the framework for how we think about soccer players. And there have been great soccer players before who totally exist within what we know is possible on the soccer field. And yet, every once in a while, I think Cruyff was one of these guys, Pelé, Maradona, they come along, Zidane, and they totally, they show you that something else is possible. And that happens in across disciplines. I mean, artists, you know, writers. I mean, I think when I read Philip Roth the first time, I was like, what? Yep. You know, things like that. Just you have these experiences and they're like spiritual.
And it's funny, you know, those footballers you mentioned are all really breaking the mold in how they even ended up on a club team. You know, Cruyff's mom was the janitor and he starts playing at 14, which is why he wears 14. And all these different kind of angles of entry into the game. I tweeted once that, you know, Leo Messi is the end of language. And he is. There's only so much that you can say that holds up. But but there are really humane things about him that make sense of what he's done. He's like the most perfect combination of talent and formation. He came to the right club at the right time. I lived for a long time, not too far, actually really, really close to Camp Nou. And you'd see this kid who was 15, 16, hanging out in front of the local corner store, just having a soft drink, and no one knew who he was. Like, really, no one knew who Messi was until he was on the first team. I mean, people knew that he was a promising kid because he pops up in magazines, but they'd always been promising kids, the Garcia brothers and all these types of people. So it's not that you stop what you're doing necessarily when you see that. But, you know, he started as a number 30. He was a big admirer.
Right winger, yeah.
right. So far right, like the number 30. Where is that on the field?
Right.
He was a big admirer of Ronaldinho, who wore number 10, and Deco, who wore number 20. So when he got his first, you know, when he got his first bit of first team play, he was wearing number 30. Then in his first full season, he switches to 19, the whole 1+9, at which point, yeah, he's playing right winger. And he does that for a couple of seasons. And he's still, you know, under Rijkaard, he's scoring 16, 17 goals. And then when Guardiola comes...
Yeah, not bad.
Not bad. But, you know, Guardiola comes. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's 38 league games, probably something like, because they weren't getting that far in the Champions League. You're talking 45 games and he's scoring 36 goals. Guardiola comes, Ronaldinho goes to Milan, and then he gets the 10 shirt. But there's this sense of kind of, you know, gradually moving into the shirt, which I think really makes sense when you think about people like Jack Wilshere, who had the 10 hoisted on him, or even this year with Hazard, right? Who really not only had the 10 hoisted on him, but had Mourinho saying things that go with 10-ness, right? This is the best player of the league. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. But Messi didn't wear that number.
Or Depay with the number 7. It's a really good thought.
Yes.
The weight of these expectations.
Bobby, so Rowan, I don't know if you know this. Bobby is a pro himself, and he's a central midfielder.
Pretty close
and
to Messi, I would say.
One of the things that we've talked about, he is the Messi of Harrisburg. One of the things that we've talked about.
Oh, I know Harrisburg. Harrisburg, PA. Yeah, I dated someone from Harrisburg.
And she was probably super hot.
Yeah.
No, actually, no, that's not true. I dated someone from Lancaster. My bad.
Not as hot.
One of the things we've talked about in a previous podcast, Bobby and I and a few other people is you know, Bobby brought up this idea that, you know, a player like him, he does hard work and then he wants the creative genius on his team to like carry his weight and do his thing, right? If he does his job right, then it'll prevent the team from losing.
That's a great way to think about it.
Right, he needs someone else to sort of provide the spark that helps them jump the hurdle and actually win. And I think that he's probably being self-deprecating in saying that, because I think he does help his teams win. But Bobby, when you have a player like Messi, I mean, that's a ridiculous thing to say, but when you have the player that fills that role on your teams, I don't know. Have you played with a player that sort of made you think, wow, that I've never seen that before. That is an amazing thing. And I think that I want to ask you that because obviously, you know, you've never been on the same team as Messi, but I think that when you're on the field with a player that does special things, you do recognize that. It's probably a little more evident to you than it might be to someone watching from the stands.
Yeah. I mean, one of the close things, I was with David Ferreira the year after his MVP. And there's,
right, yeah.
You have to take the good with the bad, right? Messi also gives away somewhere close to the most, and you might know the actual stat, he gives away close to the most number of passes in the league. As wonderful as he is, he also gets dispossessed a ton. So as his
is that because he's taking chances and he's really pushing for it, or
he's making those, trying to go for those key passes. So as his teammate, you have to find a way to keep encouraging it, and it's infuriating. But you only need one goal to win a soccer game. You just need that one moment of magic.
Yeah, right. There's also, you know, there's also a contextual aspect with those numbers. Like, Barcelona is really into positional play.
Of course.
So Messi's losing balls way up in the final third, and he's playing
and he
with
has
people.
More, right.
Right. He's playing in a position where if you lose the ball, you're surrounded by your teammates who are going to fight like hell to get the ball back. Whereas sometimes you see players making passes where they shouldn't, you know, in the second third or back in their third, and that's, you know, goal territory.
Rowan, I'm curious.
Rowan, go ahead.
I'm curious if you. This is something I think about a lot. If you were to take one trait, one singular thing about Messi, and give it to a little boy or a little girl, what would it be? What's the one trait that would give a future kid that success?
Wow, what a question.
I have my. I know what it would be about Messi. What I would say, but I'm curious as to.
See, it's funny because I would say it's not a trait, but I would say La Masia. I would say, you know, where he trained because, but that's not a trait. So,
Center of gravity. I think as a player, he has the best center of gravity I've ever seen.
You know what? And, yeah, I would have said hips. Yeah, which is almost the same thing. Hips. Yeah, I think his hips. I think physically, his hips are really different. Like he, you notice. I dare you to find a clip of him doing a step over. And he came
That's
up
the
in the age of
say.
Robinho. You know what I mean? Like
you
everyone.
You mentioned what he does is transcendent. I actually don't think it's. I think the difference between him and other 10s is I'm like, I could do that. I mean, I can't do that, but he doesn't do crazy moves or stuff that can't imagine.
I mean, but when you said that, Rowan, it made me think about, you know, those cartoons where like the feet are running really fast, but the torso is not moving at all. And so he has this ability to control his body in a way that like, and I think that you're right, Bobby, that is about center of gravity, but it's also like if you're not telegraphing where you're going with your shoulders and it's just your hips and your knees and your ankles, then that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, I think Bobby, I mean, that's kind of the point. That he does things where you think, oh, I'm going to run out there and do that, and then you fall on your face. I mean, there are the little things, like he's running at you full speed, and he doesn't turn his hips to go to the left. He just uses his ankle, you know what I mean, to like touch the ball that way while still going forward full speed. Like these little touches that are just kind of...
Another trait that he has, it's like his running gait works perfect with the motion of dribbling and shooting.
That's right.
The his gait of galloping is perfect in that motion of carrying the ball forward. Because when he dribbles and shoots and passes, it's all in a perfect running motion.
Yep, and he has almost no backswing on his shot.
Never.
When he wants to, he has none.
Yeah.
Do we know how fast he is, just like from a without the ball? How does he compare with some of the guys we think of as being really fast?
Well, I can
fast?
Tell you he's not the fastest guy on the team. Actually, because they do in preseason, they do sprint drills. Guess, I'm going to ask you to guess who the fastest person on the current squad is.
A Barcelona squad?
Yep. Is it somebody we know, or are you going to tell me Munir or something weird like that?
No, that wouldn't be fun. I wouldn't ask you if it were Munir. Take a guess.
Neymar is the obvious guess for me.
Ter Stegen.
See, that's a good guess. No, it's Jeremy Mathieu.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Yeah. Wow, that's interesting.
I would guess Jordi Alba is up there as well, but yeah,
because he's got such long legs.
Well, if the span is long enough, you reach peak acceleration and all of that, and he's just fast, you know.
What about you mentioned Ronaldinho before, and I remember that Messi and Ronaldinho had such sort of a like a special relationship. I think that Barcelona, the higher ups, were a little worried that Ronaldinho had sort of taken him under his wing, and yet he was a very sort of a liked the party, and they wanted to sort of shield Messi from
that.
That's very true.
But
let's talk about, like, was there a degree of mentorship there? Because those are two transcendent players, and the luck that Messi would have to be able to train with him and watch him must have been, I mean, that's extraordinary.
Sure. I mean, you know, Ronaldinho, peak Ronaldinho's joy really came from the ball, from playing. He loved playing, and Messi has that same joy about playing. They both really, really love the game and the subtleties of the game. I remember when Messi first came up and they would be juggling or doing little touches in practice, and they just clearly had a mutual admiration. I think that Messi was, I can't speak for Messi, but it seemed like he was really enamored, not by Ronaldinho's fame or his effectiveness, but that that joy for the subtleties of the game that I think, you know, Ronaldinho, I don't think was someone who's was as enthralled with a goal he would score as much as he would. Do you remember that first touch he did with his back once? He did a one-time touch with his back. Those types of little things, I think, which Messi doesn't do per se, but Messi is very much into, I think, the kind of micro aspects of one's relationship with the ball. The difference, one of the differences between Ronaldinho and Messi is that, you know, Messi would hang out with Ronaldinho and then go home to his family. Messi's always been with his family here. There's a story that goes around Barcelona circles that one Christmas, a tree fell on a house and the fire department came to help out and the house was Ronaldinho's and he was just sitting there by himself. Everyone else had gone to Brazil. Right.
No, that's sad.
One question really I've always had about Messi, and I'm so excited to hear what your answer is going to be. What's he like as a human being? Because we think he's the perfect little boy. But I've heard before that it was actually the Barcelona that's done an incredible job shielding him. That he actually does have the temperament and the attitude of a lot of the other number 10s we've talked about.
I have not met Messi personally one-on-one. I would forward that question along to my good friend Daniel Alarcón, who has interviewed Messi. And he'd be able to tell you that.
Well, what's the vibe around the city?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that the vibe is as follows, that Messi's very competitive, right? You can't be as good as he is without being a great competitor. But, you know, I don't know. The other things, it's very hard for me to draw, you know, personality, like your character as a player. George, I remember you saying once, see, I'm a writer, I remember everything. And I remember you saying once, and I don't even know if you remember this, but you said, I don't know that you said I don't like myself when I play, but you said something to the effect of you're very intense.
No,
when you play.
I remember. Yeah, I turn into a kind of a jerk on the field.
Now with Messi, what I know about Messi is the following. I haven't seen him take a dive, and I've seen him get kicked basically every game that he plays, and I've seen a whole lot of goals. Now, from that, the level of character that you think that you know off of the field, I really don't know how to answer that.
I mean, that's a fan's game, right? Extrapolating characteristics from the way someone plays and conducts themselves, holds themselves on the field, right?
Yeah, I'm very much agnostic to that. I know that he's not a choir boy because I don't expect anyone to be a choir boy. You know,
what do you think, Rowan? What do you make of the tattoos? I'm curious. I mean, he sort of went through this makeover in a sense. Like he got kind of a cooler haircut,
sure,
and he got tattoos, and you know what I mean? Yeah, it's funny. I mean, those are outward signs of like some, you know, some thing, some like energy inside of him that, you know, is sort of he's trying to find himself. I think that probably my guess is that if you were in that environment from the age of 13 and you're sort of being groomed for what he was being groomed for, and you grow up in that environment, you don't necessarily go through the process of becoming yourself the way that most human beings do out of the public eye getting to make mistakes.
Yeah. Also, you know, Barcelona is the type of town where, you know, you're in the city when you feel like it. But if you're a player, most of the players live, you know, in Gavà or some type of beach town like that. Some of them don't, like Eto'o lived in the city. But, you know, you can appear and disappear. His first tattoo was a portrait of his mom, let's say, right? But
that's sweet.
A lot of the players have tattoos. There's a tattoo artist in, I think it was Gracia, who a lot of them would go to. I think about it a lot like basketball, in that you have so much free time that you end up stumbling down the rabbit hole of getting a tat. And for some, it's I'm done. And for some, it ends up being pretty addictive. He seems to have chosen a middle ground. You know,
Rowan, as a fan, let's say you were going to get a tattoo of your favorite Messi play. What is the play that comes back to your mind when you brought up that Ronaldinho controlling the ball with his back, which is extraordinary? What is the one quintessential Messi play that you just can't get out of your head?
You know what? Let me think. God, there's so many. You know what I would probably do? I assume, perhaps I'm wrong, forgive me if I'm wrong, like the two of you, I have been under the influence of other things once or twice in my life. And you end up sometimes seeing things superimposed. And I think I would probably find the best tattoo artist I could to just superimpose a number of them at the same time. One of them being what he did to Bilbao last year, Balenciaga and everyone. Of course, there's the Getafe one. So many great free kicks.
Let's talk about that real quick. Actually, I know I'm taking this another direction, but he recreated Maradona's 1986 goal, which everyone thinks of that as like an irreplaceable. You know, you can't recreate that goal, and yet he did it. You know, we have another essay in this issue by Juan Vioto about like it's almost an identical replica,
that's right.
Which is extraordinary. And he also recreated the hand of God. Do you feel like? Look, the second one, the first one, the Solomon run, that was unconscious. The hand of God, to me, I wonder sometimes, like, is he consciously emulating Maradona? Is that some, it's almost like an artistic statement of his that yes, I'm going to do this because I can and because I know what this means to do this.
Oh, I think absolutely. You know, I mean, you have to be in the perfect storm and, I mean, you have to have, he has the combination of fast twitch muscle and likely muscle memory to make it happen. But yeah, I mean, from what I understand, he's not someone who sits and watches games when he's not playing. Like, he likes to play and that's it. But, you know, being from Argentina, you have those plays stapled in your head. And we first started this conversation talking about going out onto the field with a ball. And I mean, who hasn't replayed moves of your idol? But he's probably also someone who, because of his hips and because of his head, Cruyff said that football is a game that you play 90% with your head. He's already beaten probably the first two people as the ball's coming, right? So if people are lined up like they were in that Getafe game, he probably has a sense of what's possible and goes for it. I also think, though, for me, the most memorable part of that goal against Getafe was actually Edor Johansson's response, because he is on the left shadowing the whole time, like, I'm kind of open here,
dude,
is this
hello?
Happening, is this gonna happen? And then finally when the goal goes in, you see Gudjonsson just put his hands to his head, like, what? He doesn't even run over to celebrate, just puts both hands to his head, like,
right,
you know, because you have that moment where you're like, geez, this looks a lot like Maradona's goal. Too bad it's going to end up getting stopped. Wait, but it's not, it's going to I think it's going to, wait, maybe I'm gonna get the pass, wait, my god. Right?
Well, it's like the line, what's his name? Hang on, I'm trying to find it. Is it Buruchaga who said, like, did you see that pass I gave you, Diego? Like, come on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the guy who passed Maradona the ball, like, in his own
that's
half.
Right,
like,
that's,
hey,
that's
but,
right.
Hey, but come on, how about that assist?
That's right. Who was that? But that's also a great thing about Messi. Messi's one of the few players who's basically eliminated the, hey, I was open, like, holding out your arms after it doesn't work. Like, Messi, whether the goal goes in or not, people are just like, yeah, you should have taken that. You know what I mean? You had no angle and beat seven people, and I was wide open. You should take that. But he gives so many assists. How can you argue? But yeah, I mean,
right.
I think
it was Enrique who gave Maradona the ball. I don't know why I said Buruchaga. Okay, but Bobby, you got to get going. Rowan, I think this has been an amazing conversation.
It's been a lot
I think
of fun. Thanks.
Yeah, we should stop here. But thank you so much for coming on.
Anytime.
Really, that's great.
Anytime.
Thanks, Bobby. Nice to meet you. That was awesome, man.
And just a reminder, guys, this is a piece that we, you know, we're talking about this piece in issue 10 of Howler, and we have pieces like this about so many of the great number 10s, so I really encourage you to pick one up, and we'll leave it there.
Thanks, guys.
Hello, this is Daryl.
And Taylor.
From the Total Soccer Show.
If you're already listening to Dummy, then you must be a smart, savvy soccer fan with excellent taste in audio.
But you should still give the Total Soccer Show a listen anyway.
Our show is a bit of everything. We've got complex breakdowns of the latest U.S. national team performances, coverage of the Premier League, the Champions League, and MLS.
We also cover up-and-coming U.S. prospects.
Shout out to Christian Pulisic.
We draft fantasy soccer rosters, the latest composed entirely of Simpsons characters.
Yeah, buddy.
And we partake in some heated trivia battles.
So give us a listen. We put out a new show 3 times a week.
You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
That's the Total Soccer Show for all your non-dummy podcast needs.
Now back to George.
Okay, Bobby, real quick, let's do Tiki Taka. Do you have a Tiki Taka for me?
I do.
I hope you do. Okay. All right. Give it to me. What is it?
So mine is still not from the Austrian third division, although I'm trying. I really am working on upping my tiki-taka game. But something that kind of broke my heart was I went through Twitter, and sometimes when I get bored on Twitter, I think it's really fun to go through Alexi Lawless's and Taylor Twellman's and just see. And I think that they both overall are pretty good and good for the game, but they get so much crap. And I went through Tim Howard's Twitter after the announcement, and to see Everton fans give him shit. The guy was a loyal servant, nothing but positive, nothing but a good player, and it broke my heart to see these guys saying mean things to Tim Howard after all that time he gave his best to Everton.
Do we need to do like a Bobby Warshaw reads Tim Howard's mean tweets or something like that? What were people saying? I missed this completely.
Just, you know, the British things. You stupid twat.
Did Tim Howard have like agency in this move?
What do you mean?
I mean, did he choose to go or did they...
Well, that,
I mean, I guess
that's
maybe
the other
did.
Thing, right? Like, that he probably would have wanted to stay. But that's I mean, a conversation knows, right? for another day. It just makes me, it's just so hard. Fans want players to give their, to love a club. But how much can you love a club when fans do this to you even after you give a third of your life to them? So when I see things like this, I feel for players, and it just makes me sad for my peers who give so much of their heart and soul. And most fans, you know, especially people I think listen to this podcast, most fans are a lot of fans are positive, but the negative stuff sticks with you harder, and I could feel for Tim.
Do you think that bothers Tim Howard at this stage of his career? Like, or is he, I mean, come on. I think my guess is that he's probably pretty used to idiots abusing him online.
You know what happens is I don't think you take the criticism any better. You just know not to look. Rookies compared to veterans, rookies might read newspapers and tweets. And really, if you're around the game for 10, 15 years, you know not to look at your mentions, you know, particularly not when not to look at your mentions.
Were you ever scarred by something mean someone said to you?
Yeah, all the time. Even today, I still get...
Are you mad that I said earlier in the intro that that Harrisburg signed you in part because your friends and family would come to the game?
No, totally accurate.
Good.
Which makes it hurt more, George, but that's for another day.
Well, I want to come to a game. I'm one of your friends, and I want to come.
Yeah. We're down in Orlando. I'll let you know.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Okay. Bobby, my tiki-taka. It's not a good one. I'm just going to put my hands up and say that. But actually, that's not true. It's not a bad one. It's just that it's kind of a half-assed one because last night I was at the party. I met this guy named Brandon. I'm like 90% sure that's his name. I meet so many people at these things that I feel bad, and I'm also really just bad at names in the first place. But anyway, he works in book publishing like I used to, and so we talked about that for a little bit. And he told me that he also listens to the podcast. His wife bought him a subscription to Howler when we were a Kickstarter campaign, so he's been with us for a long time. And so I automatically loved him. And then he told me that he has his own podcast called, hang on, I have it pulled up here. It's called Always Cheating, and it's about... Premier League fantasy soccer. And he gave me a button that they have and like a little button, and I put it on my jacket that I was wearing. And it's got, I don't know. I was expecting something like kind of podunk, like, you know, not that, you know, look, I love fan initiated stuff. Cause that's pretty much what Howler is. Right. But I was not expecting the degree of sophistication that I see from the, I mean, I'm basing this entirely on the graphic design of this thing. Like, first of all, these guys had buttons made, which is hard to do. We basically, it took us like a year and a half to get a button made about Howler. And the graphic design of this thing, it looks amazing. I'm so impressed. And I haven't listened to it yet. And to be honest, I'm not their target audience because I'm the worst. I'm like 138th in Howler's Fantasy League right now, MLS. And I'm just really bad. I usually will remember to make, you know, trades and whatever for like 3 or 4 weeks in a season, and then I totally forget and never touch it again.
Well, George, it's the weirdest thing. Why is fantasy for soccer different than other sports? Why can't we just do an MLS draft or a different salary cap opposed to what they have now? Why do we all have the same players? It's like a mystery in the world. Why soccer fans can't figure this out?
To be honest, I think there are draft-driven games. We get emails like maybe once a week from like a new draft, like fantasy league type thing. And I love it. I love
I'm
that
in
people
the Stone Ages.
Are doing this. I know. I'm just really bad at it. And I feel like I'm so inundated with soccer stuff, like real live soccer stuff, like that I should be watching and stuff that I don't know. I don't have the bandwidth. But anyway, I'm really impressed with Brandon's thing. Hang on. You know what? Yes, Brandon Kelly. Look, he wrote the update for the most recent one, March 15th, 2016, episode 31. These guys have longevity. That's a long podcast, an hour and 22 minutes. So if you want an hour and 22 minute podcast about fantasy soccer, English Premier League fantasy soccer, this is the best place to do it. He introduced himself to me as a Premier League fan, but then I asked him what team he supports and he said Fulham. And I was like, oh, so you're not actually technically a Premier League fan. And he took the joke well. So I commend him. Anyway, I'm going to listen to it, even though I'm not really much of a fantasy soccer buff. And I suggest you do too. So that's my Tiki Taka.
Yeah, that's cool. Good for Brandon for just going for it. Seeing something he likes, sure. Seeing a niche and just going for it.
Doing it right. Okay, Bobby, that does it for this episode of Dummy. I want to thank our producers, Wes Burdine, Nick Jansen, Faisal Sikdar. I met a couple people recently who might become producers, which is pretty exciting. So, you know, hold on. I keep wanting to say their names, but it's not really like official yet. So hold on for that. I do want to tell people that issue 10 is out now. If you want to read Rowan's piece, and I have a piece in there, actually. It's about a photograph of my dad playing soccer against Pelé that I've sort of just been looking at for my entire life, but never really put too much thought into and finally did. I have an essay about that. There's so much good stuff. I'm like, that is probably, you know, that's like middle tier in terms of what's good in this issue. It's probably lower tier. We have so much good stuff, and I encourage you to go buy it, shop.howlermagazine.com. Otherwise, you can go to Instagram, What a Howler, also Twitter, What a Howler, Facebook. You can see previews of this stuff. It's really there. It's designed to like entice you to click buy. So I hope you will check it out. That's going to do it for this week. Until next time, my name is George Gracie. Just remember, when you listen to Dummy, you will never listen alone.